Hello, radio audience. I bet you were surprised. I would like to introduce you to my guest of the day, Davide, as I said, Davide Barota. Hello, David. Are you there?
Hello, Caroline. Yes, glad to be here.
I'm so glad to hear you. I have really enjoyed listening to your music, Davide. And the audience will too, I'm sure. You say you were born in Italy, in a town close to Milano.
Yes, a small town, kind of a provincial, sleepy town, about 15 miles from Milano.
Yes, you also refer to it as a rather boring little Italian town.
It was very boring and very provincial.
And so you moved to a much more exciting place, San Francisco, in your 20s, right?
Exactly, yeah. This point is quite a long time ago, but it was, definitely much more exciting, much less provincial. Much more interesting culturally.
And we who live here all our lives would love to go to Italy to hear the more, European culture, and therefore both sides want to travel across the pond.
Yes, of course.
Now, you studied piano in Milano and again at the San Francisco Conservatory with one of my friends, piano teacher Julian White.
As you know, I love Julian White.
He's a sweet man and a very fine pianist.
Yes.
He actually came to the concert when I played in Berkeley. I played the 24 Chopin Etudes, and he was in the audience with a flashlight and the music.
Oh. Sounds like Julian, yes.
Yep. Then you studied at San Francisco State for your master's degree, then postdoctoral at the UC in Davis, right?
Yes, and that was composition.
Yes,
at some point the composition bug got me, and I just went through the formal studies.
I see. Well, obviously music is your main interest in life right now, but you also have a split career as you have an academic life as a mathematics professor at UCSF, right?
Yes, I'm one of those one of those people that at a certain point split, and it took a few years to recompose. But I did taught mathematics for many years at UC. I'm still formally there.
Yes.
And so that was my academic job was in mathematics.
Yes. Well, that's so interesting. You say musicians and math. So many people think they are somehow very closely related, but you admit that you don't really see the relationship much. And I get what you're saying there. I think as I listen to your music, I mean, I hear the mathematical logic in your music, and yet what music does is exactly, probably for you, the reverse of what mathematics does. Music is what you can use for your emotional, dramatic expression, and you do that so beautifully, and yet mathematics, you use your perfect mind, so you've got the combination. Actually, they're not closely related, except they're dead opposites, in my opinion.
I'm pretty much exactly feeling the same way. Music is, to put it simply, music is part of humanities, and it talks about our condition and all its complication and uncertitude and ups and downs and moods and emotions and mathematics is a land of crystalline certitude. It's a very different beast.
In which case, that's why they're so often paired together, because they complement each other, being so opposite in their expressiveness. They're opposites, and they therefore, in this planet of dualism, this is right to have these opposite forces working together or apart.
It is probably there. I must admit, sometimes I feel that people, I don't want people say that people confuse. It seems a bit condescending, but one thing is talking about acoustics and the scales, the intervals, and the physical laws that are underlying the sounds as we perceive, and both can be described mathematically very accurately, but that is really not music. It's not a composition. It's not something that tries to express. It's not a song. It's not an opera,
Exactly.
It's just a description of sound.
Beautifully said. Yeah, that's why there's so many people who are both musicians and mathematicians of some sort. Before we play anything else, I would like to tell the audience, we turned on your music before in announcing you. What the audience has just heard is part of your first piece of music called The Sofa, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. It's a percussion quartet. And it was all mixed percussion, marimba and vibraphone. It was done about a couple of years ago, I think, at this point.
Yes, well, it's very exciting rhythmically. And I hear the vibraphone. It's one of your favorite instruments, isn't it? You use it a lot, or the marimba.
Both percussion is the vibraphone is very nice.
It's the melody of the percussion.
But I love percussion. Because first and foremost I'm a pianist. So maybe I'm attracted to percussion and
piano. Yes, piano is a percussion instrument.
Yeah, it's kind of both. It can be just.
That's right.
It can be used in many different ways, but for some reason I seem to gravitate a lot.
That's very good.
Recent years over percussion and piano.
Certainly. I can hear that very well. You have lots of wonderful percussion. I noticed that your main interest seems to be the rhythmic and of course, melodic, and the contrast between the two, and extreme emotions, extreme emotional music. I am just carried away when I hear your music. Explosive. I think we should let the audience hear a little more before we talk further. Would that be all right with you?
Yes, of course.
Okay, we'll show them some of the next piece. David's music is rather long, so we have to shorten each one by kind of fading out. So the audience can hear the entire pieces if they want to go to your website, and we'll give them the website at the end of this hour, okay? So right now we will hear a bit of your second band, Ultra Marinus Cerealis. The Berklee Symphony Orchestra is going to be playing this?
Yep.
Okay, let's go with this next portion.
Thank you.
Well, we faded out, Debbie. That was after a series of descending scales.
Yes, it was a big precipitous kind of descent, you know, after...
And after that, I know what happens. It rises back up to a powerful section. But I want to get through all of the music that you sent so that we will have to cut these short and they can listen later on.
That's a good sample. Yeah, no, this was a piece that I wrote again probably 3-4 years ago, you know, and it's called Ultramarinos Ceruleus. Uh-huh. And that is a, you know, Ultramarinos is a Latin name from ultramarine, which was a blue pigment that people used in the late Renaissance.
Right. You know, ultramarine.
The beautiful blue that you see in paintings. You know,
I'm a painter, and I use ultramarine quite often, plus Cerulean.
That's baby another, blue, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
baby
yes.
Blue. So that was the blue song. That was your blues.
Yeah, well, it was mostly, you know, but literally means from overseas. And uh-huh. So it has more of a tinge of, it's a mixed tinge of, both blue, low sonorities, mysterious mm-hmm. sonorities, but also mystery of faraway land, you know, that
yes.
brings stuff to us.
That's
and then
beautiful.
The brilliance of the color, you know, this
yes.
blue color that can just jump at you.
It's amazing how the music tones themselves are color. There is a very close connection, in fact, between art and music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why I slid easily into being an oil painter from being a composer. Now, you are also, your style, I should tell a little bit about, your style is kind of a mixed neo-tonality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the word neo-tonality, for the audience, tonal music is usually, the last several hundred years we've been using tonal music, pieces of music written in scales of 8 notes, major scales and minor scales. So tonal music has that certain set of steps, half steps and whole steps. Now, after tonality, after, in other words, we just beat it to death by the time of Wagner, and composers began to swing away from tonality. And in the 19th century, at the end, we started using 12 tones instead, all 12 tones, rather than just 8. And so that is atonal music, and so a lot of composers have been composing atonal music, use of all 12 tones freely, some not freely, such as, Schoenberg in his strict 12-tone row, but then lots of other composers use a free style of alternating, sometimes tonal, sometimes atonal, sometimes all 12 tones, and so I hear all of this in your music. And after this, after the atonality, we got the neo, which is like the modern sound of, you will suddenly have a major chord in the thing, and then just swing off into something completely dissonant again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, and I tend to stay, you know, I tend to stay away from strict 12 tones. I really, not to offend anybody again, but I really kind of feel like it was a kind of a strange chapter. And so, yeah, no, my compositions are, you know, they, especially in recent years, tend to be more and more melodic-oriented, you know, and I'm more fascinated again by rhythms,
mm-hmm.
occasionally a lot of dissonance, but again, in a melodic context.
Well,
and then I'm just mostly, right now I'm mostly fascinated by the problem of form and giving structure to a piece of music.
Yes. Our group Nakusa is of that that idea. Most of us were writing in 12-tone music at one time.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that generation. You couldn't avoid it.
you would flunk the course if you didn't write some 12-tone music. And
yes.
I wrote 12-tone music, and then one time I went to a concert in San Francisco, and they played my piece. It was just about as ugly as all the other pieces. And I hardly recognized it. So that's where I made a huge change myself.
It runs a bit in that problem. That too. If you step back, it sounds a bit... If you forget all the... complicated elaboration that has underlying it and say can be fascinating, you know.
Yes, but after a while,
then you go like, oh, this sounds ugly, actually.
So, actually, we really would like a little beauty once in a while.
Right,
you know?
Once in a while, a bit of consonance.
I certainly
know,
do. And, yeah. So anyway, that's what we have done with this neo-tonality. We've mm-hmm, kind of
yeah.
pulled back, pulled yeah. together again with something that's beautiful in the way yeah. of melodies and rhythms and harmonies, rather than just pure dissonance.
Right. Right. And there is some beautiful music produced nowadays. I think there is a real comeback of lots of composers, especially
yeah.
young, you know, people that are much younger than me.
Yes.
In their 20s or whatever, they're doing some very interesting stuff. But,
yes. I've
but it's accessible,
that.
You know, people can listen to it,
right.
enjoy it, even
right.
people that don't have, you know, but they haven't studied for 15 years music, you know, they can
yes.
enjoy it.
That's right. And then maybe our concerts wouldn't just consist of the other composers and their friends. We might actually get some, you know, normal, ordinary people coming to hear our music.
Some audience back, yes.
Yes, the audience I'm talking about.
That would be nice.
Wouldn't that? Let's go ahead now then, okay, Davide. We're going to play your next piece you want to share. It's called Rehem for Orchestra, the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra piece.
Yes.
You want to say anything before we play? You are the pianist in this recording.
I'm the pianist in there, and the San Francisco Composer Chamber Orchestra is a very neat organization and is being started by Mark Halberger.
Yes.
And basically the trick there is that most of the players are composers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have basically two concerts a year, and you basically play the whole season, and in exchange you get one of your pieces played. So it's very, very nice that way.
Very, very good. Okay, we will now hear Davide's Rehem for Orchestra, played by the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. Well,
yes.
that was not the piece, was it?
No, that was actually Dolente for two violins.
I heard the beautiful violins playing, and I thought, oh my gosh.
Yes.
Well, we've already announced number four, so let's,
number four, yes.
Let's go ahead and play that next, right now, okay?
Oh, but if you want, we can talk about Dolente for a second.
Okay, yes, let's do. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, so that is just from last year. And the two violin players are Antoine Van Dongen and a longtime collaborator with Monica Gruber. They're wonderful violin players.
Yes.
And the piece is just a long duo. It's almost 16 minutes long. So you're really listening to the beginning of it. And it's a sort of it's a very dolente, you know, it's very close to the English. Dolent, it means sorrowful. And it is a piece about sorrow, and eventually gets out of little bit of the first mood that you hear, but then it really gets into a very, very, very dark place, you know. And
it clearly is very, very sad and soulful, and that is where your lyricism expressiveness comes in. Is quite a different from the really bombastic, wonderful, exciting rhythms of some of your music. So it's a good contrast.
Yeah, no, it's a much more intimate kind of, kind of more, much more personal piece.
Definitely.
And the two violins are just, you know, violin is one of my favorite instruments, if not the favorite instrument.
I feel the same way about the violin.
It can be so lyrical, you know, just letting this.
I'm so glad we got a chance to hear that one, because that was really important part of for your contrast of your various music pieces. Now, we've already described the next one, Rahm for orchestra, so let's just hear a little of that now. We'll just probably fade it out. Okay, we've already told them about this piece, so let's hear Rahm for orchestra, San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. I wonder, David, if you had a little more trouble learning the piano part than writing it.
Oh, no, not really. Why? not particularly. It's not such a hard part, actually, the thing. But I don't know if you, you know, going back to the piece, I don't know if you heard the Shostakovich influence in that piece, you know.
But yes.
Last year I had a big infatuation with Shostakovich, that has been one of my favorite composers for a long time. And this was sort of kind of the result of this little Shostakovich that this beautiful filigrane of motifs that keep, you know, mingling and mixing, coming back, you know. So I was kind of inspired by
that. That's what made that so interesting, and I loved the piano playing you were doing on it too. And anyway, we're going to get a chance to finally. I'm so glad to get to the next piece too, because it's a beautiful Brahms Chasm for String Quartet, and I would like the audience to hear a bit of that before mm-hmm. we hear the other big percussion piano piece. So, would you like to say anything about that, or can we just go ahead and play it?
Well, that's a, you know, that is a very, very recent production. I brought it last August.
Mm-hmm.
The Friction Quartet, which is a wonderful new string quartet that is based in San Francisco, plays it. And this, again, is part of my Shostakovich period.
Uh-huh.
And if people have heard Shostakovich number 8, which is a masterpiece, an absolute masterpiece. There is even a little quotation at some point of Shostakovich number 8.
I have not heard that. I'm going to have to listen.
Yeah. Yes.
But for right now, I'd like to hear again a portion of your string quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yes.
Okay, we'll just give a little for the audience right now.
Thank you.
beautiful piece.
Yeah, thank you. And they played it. It's a wonderful group. They have a wonderful energy, actually.
Yes, and so certainly.
They do a good job with it.
Okay. Well, so anyway, David, a few more things I didn't mention to the audience, which I should. You are very involved in the San Francisco music scene at this time, board member of San Francisco Composers Chamber Orchestra and soloist, and a board member of NACUSA, co-organizer of the Contemporary Music Festival in San Francisco, and working, teaching composition at the Community Music Center there.
Mm-hmm. The Venerable Community Music Center, which is a...
Yes, I have performed and had things done there, too, in the past, before I met you.
So, well, it's been there, I think it was the 75th anniversary a couple of years ago.
It's a very good good place to have music
concerts. Yeah, it's a good place. Yeah.
So anyway, your future projects, you're collaborating with Anne Sajdera, writing for two pianos?
Yes, we have this very interesting project, and we are writing basically a piece for two pianos each, you know, basically for each other, you know, and we are going to probably perform it sometimes in the fall. And we just had this idea of writing for two pianos, which is like having two orchestras at your fingertips. You know?
That would be fun to hear.
Yeah, no, that would be probably... Hopefully we'll come out nice. I mean, I'm sure that Anne's piece will be wonderful, and hopefully I get to write something good, too.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you have already won a number of awards, ASCAP Awards, Zellerbach Foundation, and so forth, and you deserve to be heard many, many more times.
Oh, thank you. You're too kind.
I do want to tell the people that want to hear more of your music, they can visit your website, and I will give that title right now. The website number is it looks like David, DAVIDE, Verota, VERROTTA.com. Davide Verota.com. So go there and you will hear his music anytime you want. So have you got any final thing you'd like to say to the musical audience?
Oh, not. Do you have any questions for me? That might be easier. I'm not sure. I'm ready to tell something specific to them.
What I do see is I sense that you have a musical palette that you prefer certain colors on that palette, and I hear them throughout all of the pieces, as varied as the pieces are. I hear this same kind of sense of like. Intensity of emotions, and then calm places, and I hear similar use of the various instruments to bring the dynamics, and you have these great descending scales, and then they rise up again to very strong, emotional content in every one of your pieces. Nice contrast of highs and lows, and solo and group, and alternating of brass and strings and percussion. So far.
Well, you know, I think that at the end of the story, I mean, your personality does emerge in what you write, you
certainly.
Know, and I have, you know, and there are these three elements, there's the pensive, you know, that occasionally, you know, can lead a bit into the serious, and maybe sorrowful a bit, and there is a highly emotional, I'm a very emotional person.
Yes.
And then there is also the witty, you know, which has been kind of, it's coming up only recently, you know. But for example, Rehem, if you hear it to it, if you listen to it, that would be kind of a witty place, you know.
All of that can be heard in your music, and we composers often don't even realize people can get who we are if they listen to enough of our music, know who we are.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
It's a main beauty, I think, of doing, you know, of doing music or probably any art, you know, that again, you have to find this place in which you can be honest to who you are. And sometimes it can be hard, you know, because there are things that are either very private or things that you might even be slightly ashamed of, you know.
And it's all
or
there.
Or really could be questionable even, you know. And you have to have the kind of the courage of being honest and write or music or painting or something about them. You know?
You're right. The courage, that's what
it
takes.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of that if you're, again, because you go to these very personal places and suddenly you're sharing them.
You are sharing who you really are, and not many people have that courage to do that. That's what we creative people tend to do. The first piece of music I ever wrote at age, I don't know, teenagers, I took the piece, one page full of notes and words and melodies, everything, and I showed it to my teacher, and you know what? He looked at it, and he said to me, he said, Carolyn, everything you have to say in music, you have said on this one page, and all the rest of your music will be you trying to describe it.
And I think he was, that, I guess, can be good or bad.
whatever.
So, it reminds me of an interview that I heard from Arvo Pärt, you know, the wonderful composer.
Yes.
That he went up to a Russian Orthodox priest, you know, and he talked about why he was doing music, and the Russian Orthodox priest basically look at him and he said, like, well, you know, everything that needed to be written has been written already.
Right.
It's a great thing to hear, but I'm not sure.
That doesn't make you feel
very inspiring for a composer.
Not too inspiring, not at all.
Not like, oh, really? I don't have to write anything more? Okay.
And so we must be just born masochists. We do it anyway.
Exactly.
We do it anyway.
Or we repeat ourselves.
We're each special. I want to be sure that we have chance to hear now this wonderful piece you have sent for piano and percussion. This is the last one we'll have to be able to share, and so I want the people to hear this piece. Have you got anything to say about it?
Yes, this, well, two things. I hope you don't, now I'm a little bit afraid, I hope you don't find mistakes in my playing in this piece too.
I won't look for them, how's that?
I hope so. And second, you know, this is a kind of another fun project. After a few years away from the piano because I was composing so much, I'm going back to the piano with a vengeance.
Good for you.
And this is actually a project in which I play both. The project is that I, you know, the performer plays both the piano and the percussion. So the idea is to write a set of etudes for pianist percussionists.
Amazing, know? Amazing.
Yeah. And it's very fun because it's one of those things that you are sitting in your studio and you really have to choreograph, you know, because as you can imagine.
Wow, that beats Dylan, what was it, Bob Dylan and his harmonica and guitar player.
Yeah, it's a bit more complicated.
Okay, this is David playing both the piano and percussion in his piece, Study for Pianoforte and Percussion. And this is Carolyn Hawley again from Word Weavers Radio. I hope you've enjoyed meeting this wonderful composer today. And again, we are repeated on Monday nights at 11 o'clock at KPFZ 88.1.org. Okay, here it is, David.
Thank you so much for having me, Carolyn.
Thank you so much, David. Here it is. Thank you.
KPFC would like to thank Kelsey Creek Brewing for their generous support. Kelsey Creek Brewing has been in business 2 years. Their business hours are Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., and Saturday, noon to 8 p.m., and Sunday, noon to 5 p.m. Kelsey Creek Brewing provides fresh, handcrafted beers and imported cigars. Kelsey Creek Brewing is located at 3945 Main Street in Kelseyville, California, and their phone number, should you want to reach them, is 707-279-2311. Thank you for your support.